business leaders create a vision, articulate the vision, passionately own the vision, and relentlessly drive it to completion. This is a famous quote by Jack Welch, and what really stands out for me in this quote is the fact that relentlessly driving your vision to completion, truth be told, is a lot of us have visions, we are passionate about them, we articulate them so well, but then the journey to achieving our vision to completion is not a very straight road. There's so many things that come to play, we have so many challenges, and sometimes a lot of the people just end up not doing exactly what they had intended to do, and just they end up doing something completely different. So I relate a lot with this scenario, because when you're trying to achieve something, sometimes you face a lot of internal conflict and even doubt yourself if you're really doing the right thing. So today's guest is someone that I know that is on a mission to relentlessly drive her vision to completion. I have seen her work so hard. I have seen her learn. I have seen her grow. I've seen her build. And I think she does an amazing job, and she continues to build an amazing business. Our guest today is called Lilian Warutere. She's the program lead at Redesign Learning. So what she'll do, she'll tell us what Redesign Learning is all about. She'll talk to us about her journey, how she started, what she's learning along the way. And I know you guys are going to enjoy this story, because I know most of you who are listening probably have these ideas in mind. You're just thinking, so maybe by listening to some people's stories, you'll just kind of find encouragement and just see ways on how you can be able to encourage yourself and just be able to relentlessly drive your vision to completion. You are listening to the Creative Bulb Podcast. My name is Masha Tisa, and this is the show where we help you get to your full creative potential. So ladies and gentlemen, let us welcome Lilian Warutere to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's nice to meet you, Masha.
There's a lot actually I get to learn from you. So I think it's a very important now session for the listeners as well to now get to listen to the words of wisdom you have, and also from your story. Would you just now take us through who's Lilian?
Okay, cool. So I can give a small brief of who I am. So I am a learning designer or an online course creator. So you can choose either or, but mainly what I normally say is promotional learning experiences, meaning that I love to see people grow and just see themselves be better through learning. And that means practical learning. I'm big on learning by doing. So that's one of the things that I normally like really focus on. That's where Redesign Learning actually came up from. That's my company, where we actually work around helping people learn by doing, by practicing, by doing projects. And right now we're focusing a lot more around content creation. So that is what we do. We've created something that's very unique, project-based. We're growing it, and we love it a lot. So that's me in a brief. My biggest hobbies are just jogging and having a lot of sun time. Those are my biggest highlights of any week.
Wow, that's amazing. Learning designer, wow, okay. I've heard of graphic designer, I've heard of so many things. Learning designer is, it's kind of like a new term I started hearing just the other day, like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. So I can give like how I came to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is that something you've always wanted to do? Can you like give us a history? How did you get to decide to be a learning designer?
Okay, cool. So I can start way back to the inspiration of it. So just like everyone else, I was a student in uni. We've all had this particular experience of Kenyan education system at some point in time. Mm-hmm. So for me, the point that was specifically like really a hinge point for me in terms of wanting to see something different in my education, in my experience as a professional, was really to the project. Like there's the fourth year project that people normally do in university. I think in TVET it's a bit different, but there's also a project for them. So everyone has this one project that they get to do at some point in their journey, either in uni, in TVET, in college. And for me, what happened to me was that it was supposed to be like that moment in time where things are practical, because all through we were just doing theory. And it wasn't the best experience for me. I had a supervisor, they weren't able to guide me. There were internship opportunities at the same time. I didn't get a guide. So for me, really seeing that experience as being like, we have this like one time to actually be learning practically, especially in universities, but we don't have a guy to take us through that step of, this is how you learn practically. This is how you work with a boss. This is how you manage a boss. This is how you manage like going to people and asking them questions. So there was a whole big hole in that. And that moved me into like the education space a lot. I've always been a reader, loved the library. So I was like, yeah, I'm passionate about this space. Let me go and actually see what could happen. So I joined two different education-based businesses. The first one was Elewa, and then the second one was Elimu. Both of them were actually fantastic in opening my mind to something new that was happening in the education space. So in Elewa,
after they campus?
Yeah, it was after campus.
Oh, during, okay.
So I graduated, went to Elewa first. They have a very unique system where they teach people, make it very enjoyable. And they specifically, so at the time they were focusing on secondary schools and they were helping teachers to be able to teach well in class and help students remember what they've learned. So some things like things that we never used to see the usefulness of it, like why do human beings make food for themselves, but animals, like they can't make food for themselves like plants. So they made it so interesting that one day there was a class we were in and the teachers were told, if you start with a story, students would actually get it. Like you leave a dog and your plant in your house for a week when you've gone to coast for, let's say, Mombasa Raha. When you come back, which one would you find alive, the plant or the dog? So even when you're asking that question, some people would say the plant, some people would say the dog, and we'd ask them, why do you think it's the plant? And they would say, probably the plant makes its own food. Like when it's in soil, you image it sort. As long as you can imagine, 1 week, you'll find it there. But the dog, if you don't leave the dog with food, 1 week down the line, it'll actually be dead in your house. So the teachers would just start with such a conversation. The students would be like, oh my gosh, it actually relates. What we learn in school, in biology, is actually important in real life. And so it was what they introduced to me around was inquiry-based learning. And that was like a different way of designing how people will learn in class. And so that changed my way of thinking around, you know, some of the things that we learn even in university, maybe there was a more interesting way of doing it so that they would stick and it would actually show like why it's important for everyday life. So that's where I began with learning design, taking courses, going to different startups just to learn about how to make learning more enjoyable, more meaningful, and more realistic to people so that it can be sort of like practical.
Wow, that's nice. How to make learning more enjoyable. As a person who's gone through the education system, I know there's a lot we may have done better. And even as a person who's probably even taught in the same system, what do you think are some of the things we are missing on when it comes to learning?
So I remember we had a chat at some point, and I remember you were still a lecturer somewhere in a university. So that's one of the things, I don't know your audience knows, but yes, Masha is a lecturer. Well, she's taught in school as well, you know.
Yeah, I've even taught school. I've even taught like very young kids, like nursery kind of. It's a balance of both.
Nice. So for me, like what I liked about our conversation that day was that you were actually sharing the fact that for you, you give your students practical stuff. You actually tell them, go do this, do this and that and that. So for me, that was the part that was missing from. So I did BCom marketing class. You would probably be told like create a marketing plan for a business that's way out there, but you don't actually test it. You don't know if it's workable. You know, you're just putting things together and you're like, yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
And so the aspect that was missing was that being told, now go try it and see if it will work. And trying it in a space where you feel you're safe. Internships don't tend to be a lot of a safe space because you don't know the boss that you'll get. You might get boss, or you might not have thought about like you're going to learn. You start looking for a boss, you find a good job. And then because you didn't think about getting a boss who's really understanding so they can let you grow on the job, you find someone who's really strict, doesn't let you be creative, doesn't let you grow. So you end up seeing like your internship experience is wasted. So we saw like there's this huge gap whereby people want to do things practically. The university sees there's a gap and actually creates opportunities. That's the internships and the projects. But when students go to take this advantage of these opportunities, there's someone who's missing right there. And that's the guide who tells them, when you're going to look for a practical kind of experience, this is the first thing you need to do. This is the second thing you need to do. This is the contract you need to have. This is the person you need to talk to. We can actually help you take things step by step because you know what have happened. You see, that kind of guide would make the experience of any student much more about learning and growing rather than frustrations or not understanding what you need to do. Because sometimes even your boss will give you a task and they don't even know how you should do it. We have like one student who told us like, this boss is telling me to do this thing. I don't know how to do it. When I ask them, they're like, you go figure it out. And you know, you're stranded with the same person and they put for you goals. So people get lost in that space when they're trying to really be a person who is implementing what they've learned. And so we felt like we could place ourselves there as Redesign Learning and tell them that we could actually be your guide. Whether you're an internship, whether you're an entrepreneur who's starting marketing and you're the only marketer on the team, you're designing the posts, you're doing this, this is everything that you do. And you're thinking about creating a system to make it work for you because you have so many other things you're doing. So you're an entrepreneur, you're a writer who's creating books, and you've seen that your sales have not gone well. Actually seeing how can we help you create a content like system so that people know about what you're going to write before you even start selling it. So entrepreneurs, writers, students, especially marketing and communication students who are doing their internships, those are the three main people that we're actually looking for. And even sometimes you see designers who want to actually double in digital marketing, because right now when you look at job descriptions, you see a designer is told da 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 da, you know, Adobe Photoshop, Canva, and then at the bottom, a plus if you have digital marketing skills. So some of them are actually looking for these skills because companies are actually asking for them. So even designers I pull at, we're welcoming to the group because they might end up being multitaskers in terms of, yes, you're a designer, but you know the whole process to the point of if any company you tell actually knows that you can do this, then it gives you the edge over everyone else applying.
Let's now go back. You went to Elewa, then Elimu, and then that's when you got inspiration to now get into this space.
Yeah.
So what were your aspirations before you decided to be a learning designer? What is it that you wanted to do before?
Okay, cool. So there's a space in between all that as well. I remember we met at different places. So there's the time we met at NDI. Mm. You remember we were doing the design thinking workshop. So I was also into design thinking. And I think that's where we actually met, Masha. I think that's because I was even interested in the first place.
It was at NDI. And that was a project we're supposed to do together. You remember? We'll still do it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I hope so. I know you're always busy as well. You normally have so many projects. Like you're a multitasker, you have so many creative projects.
Yeah.
But we'll still I'm do always it. Like, when the time comes, we'll be there. And we'll see if we can. Ideally, that's where my interest was around design thinking as well. So I was around design thinking, did a few workshops around design thinking, one at NDI, and the other one was at African Nazarene. They normally have like a thing around design thinking. So that was one element that was going on for me, even as I was doing education. And then I think the one thing that really sparked my interest around doing this was when I joined Amani. So there's the Amani Social Innovation Program. Amani helps people enter into the social entrepreneurship space, which is mainly your goal is as an entrepreneur, social good, making more and impact. And that for me really like synced with what I wanted to do. Like I wanted to be create a business that, it's making profit, but I really wanted to see impact because for me, that kind of education space is all about helping people to grow. And for me, like, one of the things I always describe myself is like I'm a loving teacher who helps people to grow. That's like for me, whenever I see that, that's why I continue with Redesign Learning for the past 1 year, despite challenges of COVID and everything. For me, it's just like when I see our students like see themselves like doing greater things, for me, it's just like, wow, I mean, if I can play a role in that, it feels amazing for me every day. It makes it like worth the while. So for me, it was more journey from the two organizations, design thinking, and then understanding what social entrepreneurship was in Amani, and then they helped me start pick off my idea around the course So it started off physical 2019, and then because of COVID, went online. And being online, it's opened for us so many opportunities as an online company.
That's nice. Wow, okay. I can see your journey. Everything's like everything kind of aligned. For me, I was more interested in design thinking because I also wanted to understand how design can be of impact because I just didn't want to design stuff. But I think that's when I landed into the whole notion of designing for children and just how to get into that space. Through the experience, all of us were able to pick certain things that really would help us in different things that we get to work on. So you go to Amani, so you go to Amani, you learn about social entrepreneurship, and you get to affirm your decision to start.
So it was a project at Amani. We started, of course, one of the things that they do is that they challenge people to actually start a project when you're still in the course. So that was something that I also loved. They focus on experiential learning. So you learn stuff and then they actually tell you go and do it, and then we'll be the guide for you. So they actually guide you in terms of you need to do this, do that. You come back to them, tell them, oh, this is working, this is not. They teach you around how to experiment. So that was the kind of kick that I needed to actually start off the design learning. So we started it off at that moment in time, very simple, like a simple poster, put the information there instead of asking like employers, because that's what we were actually putting offers. Like, would you like anyone in your team? Because we're looking at interns, especially an intern to actually go through this program. So we take them through the poster, we tell them this is what the program will be about. Would you actually pay for your intern to actually do this? And some of them were not. But just starting with a poster, that was the beginning of us seeing that testing your idea is just putting it down on paper in a very good way, it, showing it to someone and asking them, would you actually pay for this? And then if they say yes, of course, you learn that opinion is not important. You tell them, like, could you pay now? And they'd be like, hey, no, I can't pay now. Maybe another day or something. And you'd ask them, okay, could you give us your email? So they give you your email, their email. You keep them updated, what you're going, your progress, and then they come in at some point. So for me, even it's the process of understanding, experimentation and test ideas. So for me, I always say, like, never tell someone, show them. So for me, I think that helped me understand that when you're testing ideas, just know that your idea, any idea is valid. Like for me, that was what I got at that point. There's so many ideas I normally test. I just put them on a nice kind of a graphic. I put the idea down, I give it to someone, they're like, yeah, I will. I'm like, I just thought about this like a few minutes ago. So it just requires to, like, think of your any idea can be the next big idea. So treat them like that. Every single idea you have can be the next big idea. You just need to treat it like that. So I think for me, that's what I did. I put the idea on paper and made it look like it was the next big idea, shared it with people and told them, like, of course, very truthfully, authentically, like, this is where we're at, or this is where we want to go. And the people who are willing to go, what jumped in with us, and that's where we started off.
Can I just say one of the things I got to learn from you, Lillian? I don't know you know it, but the whole point of testing your ideas, there's a time I was doing a recording on procrastination, and I was saying one of the reasons why people procrastinate sometimes for me is also because of perfection. So, because you want your things to be in a certain way, and then the biggest challenge with creatives is because you have a lot of ideas coming in your head. So what happened is because of perfection, you end up not doing anything. So I actually came to realize it's very good sometimes to test your ideas. Test your ideas, see how they'll work, and then so that you get to invest fully into achieving whatever it is that you have in your mind for your idea. So let me ask you, because I know that people are listening and they're wondering, okay, how do people test the ideas? Would you just break down roughly how, what are some of the ways we can do this whole test idea testing thing?
Okay, cool. I can give some of the tips that have actually guided me and maybe examples that can help people be like very practical. So, for example, one of the things that we wanted to test for our students was that halfway through the course, we actually asked them to pitch whatever they've created to their clients. So some of them actually get clients during the course because you actually tell them, go get a client, and this is how you can actually get a client. They get the client and you tell them. One of the ideas we had was that, yeah, we want this to be very practical, so let's have them do a pitch. So I had this idea of the pitch. I went to a Canva template, went and typed out the details of the pitch just in 1 hour. And then after that, I actually showed them to our team member, Melanie, and she was like, yeah, we can actually try this. So I looked for a few people who are interested. I just told them, yeah, there's nothing you're paying. You're just coming to give these people feedback on their strategy because they create strategy for their content. So they looked at it and they were like, yeah, me, I'm interested. I'm not going to pay. I'm going to get ideas from these students. And they were like, I'm willing to actually come. So these were actually businesses. So we were actually targeting photography businesses at that time. So two photographers came in and we told the students, yeah, you'll be pitching to these two people. And we had prepared them well beforehand. So they pitched and they loved the experience because for them, it was like, oh my God, I didn't know it was supposed to be. So for me, it was just seeing from that experience that in coming to test, three things that actually guide me is one, whenever you have an idea, put it down on paper in the most beautiful way that you can look at it. Respect the idea and make it like see it as the next big idea because you really don't know like if it will be.
Yeah.
And just treat it. Don't be the one to tell yourself no to any idea. Let everyone else be. So for me, I always say like I have an idea, I push it, and then I let other people be the ones to tell me no. For me, it's always yes to every idea because it might actually really. And then number two is that whenever you have an idea, don't spend more than 2 hours working on it. When you spend more than 2 hours on it, you get too invested. So that if people say no, and it wasn't like an idea that was at its right time, or that it wasn't like well-crafted. If you spend 5 hours trying to create something, you feel emotionally hurt because you're like, hey, I put 5 hours. I can't believe that people are saying they don't like it or this. But if you invest like 1 hour, 2 hours, you're like, I just spent 2 hours on this. I can change it real quick. So the mindset of someone who can actually create a test of an idea is someone who, one, can create it in a very short period of time and reduce the amount of emotional connection they have with an idea. That way they can actually better. They want their idea, specific idea, be the best, but knowing that it can grow with time. So you just put in 2 hours, you get feedback, 2 hours again, you get feedback, 2 hours, you keep on going. So we also try to teach that to our class that you might do an assignment this week. It's not perfect. You put more effort next week on the same assignment, next week, the same assignment. So over time, they're improving, over time, it's sinking in. So for me, I normally believe in small efforts over a period of time is what actually matters rather than doing everything at once. It tends to create like lots of friction and it doesn't create that mindset that you want if you want to really like test and improve something. Number one, put it down, test it in a very short period of time. Number three, limit feedback to just a minimal number of people and then increase. So you don't get too much feedback at once. Just choose, I'm going to get feedback from 5 valid people who you know will give you like great feedback. And then improve on it, 5 other people, improve on it, like that.
Yeah. Wow. That's really, I think I get it. Because sometimes mostly, and I think even this advice really works well with project, like an idea of a project. Because sometimes you find you get to invest a lot of time on that project. Well, it's something you would have just like tested, done something very simple, see how people relate to it, and then get to improve with time. I think for me, that's the same thing I may have done unknowingly with the podcast is I created the artwork, did the first recording. I was like, what do you guys think? Okay, I think you should do this do it for 20 minutes. Then the next time you do it for 15 minutes. So the more you continue, the more you keep learning. So by the time you're ready to do something, along the way, you only get to learn by starting. You only get to learn by starting. That's really nice. So you've already, you have this idea, you've gone out. You've mentioned something about your team. But at what point, because so far from your story, I can only get you are by yourself.
Yes.
At what point do you get to have people in your team?
So when I was starting off the course, I wanted to focus on something that would be useful for a lot of people, even as we're looking at this landscape of like skills that everyone will actually need. And one of the skills that I saw is digital marketing. So at the time starting it off, I wasn't actually an expert in digital marketing. So I actually reached out to someone who I saw was really growing in the space. That was Melanie Apiso. I told her I want to create a course. I'll be teaching some of the classes, but you can also teach some. So digital marketing, and especially what we focus on, content creation, has two aspects of it. There's the content creation part and there's the strategy part. So I'm a bit good on the strategy part, but the content creation part, she would actually come and pitch in and really do it because she had her own formula and everything. So we worked together to create the course, and we've been working with her for the past 1 year, more full-time. How she works part-time because she also has her agency right now that she started. And then we actually brought in Gideon this year to help us a bit more in terms of opening our eyes in the opportunities that are out there. Yeah. So ideally, we started off two people at the beginning.
How did you get to navigate in terms of getting people to your team? Were you friends before with them? Mm-hmm. How easy was it for you? Like, what tips would you give for someone who's looking for people to get into their team?
Okay. So how I found people was I found people who we connected on in values. So for example, Melanie, there are a lot of digital marketing people out there, but like I always share this with her as well, is that there are two things that for me like stand out working with her, is that one, she's actually very good in digital marketing, but two, she has that burden of helping people. And for me, that's what I was looking for. Like someone who actually you can see has this spirit of service. So that's what we call it. That's how like I would define it. Something that I'm also building around the values of the course is that this thing that's called the spirit of service, where you go out of your way to help people. Those are the kind of people I connect with. Of course, the first thing you want to check is like if these people actually have the skills to do the job. That's the first thing, because if they don't have the skills, then it's very frustrating for like everyone, even themselves. But for me, what I say is that, yeah, definitely the skills, they have them, yes. But other than the skills, this spirit of service for me is really, really important. Like I look for people who will go out of their way to help people. And so like even for the students that we've had a community for the past 1 year where we're just helping them out. And, you know, they don't pay us because it's just the community. They pay for the course. 1 year afterwards, it's actually free to be in the community. We're giving them projects. We're giving them opportunities. We're giving them workshops. Not because they're paying us, but because we're kind of people who believe that we want to make an impact. And that impact is seeing each and every person who enters into our community actually get their first job. If it's not their first job, their second, their third, their fourth, and they have people that they're learning from and they're actually like getting a lot from. So the only way we can do that is if we have people in the team who actually have that spirit of service, who know that when it comes to communities, the only way communities actually thrive is when people actually have that spirit of service. Where in a community of 20 people, if 20 people give workshops, 20 people benefit because one person has been to 20 people's workshops. And that means that even as you're teaching others, you're being taught by so many other people. And that's the only way a community can grow really well.
What are some of the things you learned from the experience of the first course?
Okay, cool. So the first cohort, we normally have cohorts. So there was the first cohort we had in 2019. So what we did was that actually was now, so for me, it was more of like Melanie was coming in to teach. So for me, I would do the hard work of getting the students. I would do the hard work of marketing. So Melanie was coming in to actually now share her expertise during those classes. So when I was looking for someone to work with, actually, that's the first time we met with Gideon. So that's when he helped me actually connect to the lecturer in a particular university, Catholic University. Yeah. Be able to work with a few to actually train them. And we priced the training really low because we wanted to actually see and give the students maximum value just to like show them what we could do. So the first thing is that we worked with the teacher, got a few students, and then we started off the training. And so from then on, because of COVID, we turned online, but we've been growing ever since, learning each and every cohort. So cohort is a group of students. So around cohort 5. So with each cohort, we're actually learning how to make the course better, how to make it more practical, how to make sure that our students are getting the most out of it. So it was around 6 students. I remember there was a few of them. It wasn't many.
Well, so what is the thought process like? Were you happy with the turnout? Like, would you take me through now the whole process? Was that the expectation? Did you intend to have more people?
We thought there would be more people because ideally we were giving them something that we felt was a gap in the whole university like system. We expected more, but for like the first go, ours was just learning like what would work. Like we had an idea of what would work, but it's sort of like now you test it and see, would it really work? And so for us, we had to really redesign the class in terms of like how we work. Most classes, students come into class fresh, come in, they learn, and then you tell them to go through the assignments. So that was like our first cohort. But as we went along, we actually learned that our students actually benefited more from them. We just tell them, do your research, do these assignments. When they're coming to class, all they're doing is actually reflecting on what they've done and learning how to do it better. So that's all about now designing the classes to see how can they benefit the most from it. How can they learn a new system of learning that would help them not only in the course, but even afterwards. So for example, a student gets a job, it's the same way they would work with a client. A client tells them, I have this task for you, finish this task. And the client at that point would even give you resources. Good ones would actually do it. But a client will tell you, do this and this by this date. And then they actually go do it, do their research, do it, and then they come back and show the client. So for us, we're like, okay, that's the system you'll get out there. This is the system you should get in any course, in any institution. Because when you get used to that, when you go to job, you won't be frustrated. You won't start like trying to find out, oh no, like how do I start organizing myself because I have this work until this time. So if you start the process very early and you train people to get used to it, when they start working with clients, it's a lot easier for them. They can now present themselves as professionals.
Wow. Yeah. For me, I find your process of starting RED-Learn to be more, you tested your ideas, got feedback from people. So I can assume the process wasn't like a really hard thing for you per se. The only challenge was just getting people on board. Did you struggle with doubt? Did you fear? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the things that were running through your head at that period? Because remember, it was just immediately after campus. So what was that thing? What are some of those things that you got to struggle with?
Okay, so for me, like, yeah, it was definitely hard. It was a struggle. I can remember the times that were really, really hard because you're marketing something and you don't know if people are listening, if people are going to be interested. Yeah. And you're like, okay, so, and I'm doing this full-time at the moment. I was doing it full-time. So it was like, you know, it's hard. It was really, really hard. And ideally, that's the kind of thing that we try and solve for our students because we've experienced it, that sometimes even as an entrepreneur, a writer, a designer, or like a student, if you're doing a marketing job, marketing can make it so hard for you to get your goals that ideally it even removes the passion you have for whatever you're doing. So even for like, you can see it even with writers and entrepreneurs. Like you're an entrepreneur, you have a very great product, but because you haven't hacked marketing, it makes you feel like you're not meant to be doing that particular job that you want to do as an entrepreneur or even a writer.
Yeah.
You feel that just because you can't market well or you haven't been doing it well, because you're not seeing the output of sales, you're like, hey, is this what I'm doing as an entrepreneur? Maybe you make cutlery or you make art and you're like, I don't know if this art is for me because marketing is telling me that it's not. So ideally what we're trying to do is to help people start thinking of or marketing to be something that's not going to stop you from achieving your goal in whatever aspect you're looking for. Either as an entrepreneur, a writer, or even as a marketing intern, you want to be that star in that job. And marketing is letting you down. We help you see it as something that can help you get that star. We help you create a system and a mindset that will help you see marketing, help you reach your goal rather than push you away from meeting your goal.
There's a previous chat I was talking with Nkatha. She's called Irene Chege. She owns a craft business. And for her, she has a sales and marketing background. And most of the feedback that was coming in from different people was most people actually have a very good product. Like bakers have very nice cakes. The people who make amazing things, the people who have a very good product. But then marketing becomes that one thing no one wants to really think about. You know, you might even have the business, right? But then marketing is just one of those things people don't really want to get to. So it's really nice for not people like you now who come in and now are providing solution to this whole marketing pain. Because most of the times, we just want to create. We don't want to market.
Yeah.
So let me ask. So Lillian and for Aridila, that means I have a business and I need marketing. So what it does is, are you training? So that means you're training me to learn how to market, or can you as well give me someone from your team to market? How do you know, like, if I approach you that kind of problem, so what are you doing for me as a person?
So it depends. We have a very specific target. So we mainly target young professionals between the age of 18 to 27. Reason being, we want to create a course that's very specific for them because that's the gap we were seeing. Like, we were targeting people in college, in university or high school leavers, or people who are entrepreneurs early in the stage of, even when you're in uni, you started actually doing a business and you're taking it off even after you've graduated. So those are the people that we're looking for. But we also work with people who are looking for interns. So when we train them, we actually create our own database and we tell people, like, if you're looking for an intern, we can actually connect you with people. We tell them to create a portfolio, look at the work that they do, and you can actually be able to tell, this is someone I'd like to work with. So we work both ways. Either we can train you if you're within like the range of people that we're actually focusing on. If you're not, if you're a bit further off, we actually And we'll probably create products that anyone who is not within our audience can be able to still learn with us. But for now, the main thing we offer is that we connect you with someone who we've trained and they can help you out.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's nice. Now there's something you'd mentioned. You'd mentioned about being full time. So, what does full time really mean for you? Because a lot of the times, guys who are full time work, who call themselves full time workers, probably are working somewhere in an office. They have like an 8 to 5 job. I'm there full time. So, how would you differentiate? Not for you. It's not like you're going to an office. Okay, you're going to an office, your office. How do you like, what's full time and what's part time for you?
So full time means that I'm working from home, but I'm organizing my time such that, like, I'm in my own office. So I plan out my day with the fact that I want to design the course. So I'm either designing the course or doing marketing or teaching a class. So sometimes it's a combination of three depending on the month. Sometimes it's a combination of only two, just designing and marketing the course. So that's for me what's a full-time job. So I have very supportive parents who've let me actually do this for the past 1 year. And it's actually been interesting for me just learning really, really fast, doing a few courses. So right now I'm also doing a course around creating transformational online experiences. So that's actually what I'm focusing on. So I've been multitasking, learning and implementing for now. That's why I always encourage people, if you can, especially in uni, and that's even why we're doing what we're doing. We want to get guys to start experimenting with what they're passionate about while in university, because that's the time where you're learning and it gives you the time to actually be able to start planning how to do it. Because when you check, like, we didn't do this project until some time later on, mainly because you have to get a job, you have to start thinking about your career and everything, and getting that time to stop and actually implement what you want to do, there's no that time isn't there because you have the pressure of, I need to get a job, I need to pay this and that, I don't have money for that and that. So what we're trying to do is that anyone who's in university and is thinking of really getting down to, I want to start off early so that I can actually have the opportunity to work on my passion, we help them through that rut so that you can start off really early. Because if you start after university, and we've even tried with students who are working with, so sometimes it's really well if you can work with students who are on the internship after university, they make time. But after uni, even learning is so hard. Because you're looking for time in between your job and everything to actually do that. So for me, part-time has been like, before was more of like balancing the job and actually thinking about this idea. But for now, for me, full-time is me managing my own time, doing everything in their business, or like at least most of the things, because I have like a team who's really helping me out. I do most of the things in the business that allows them to be able to like do their own businesses as well. And then we have the right time to actually help out our students. So full time means for me 8 to 5, I'm working on the business daily basis.
Wow. Yeah, that's really nice. I've been listening to so many stories of different people, and they get to see the realities of self-employment. Sometimes there's a discipline that is usually attached to it, and I keep saying this every time, every time, every time. For you, I think you're very structured person. You I know if you say you're going to wake up at 8:06, you wake up at 8:06, then you run for 10 minutes or 11 minutes, you know. Have you, like, in terms of managing all your time, in terms of being self-employed and being full-time, in terms of being full-time now, what would you advise someone now who's really struggling in that area? Because right now, even when after Corona now, most of us are working from home, but many people have struggled with being productive at home. What advice would you give for such people who are constantly distracted and they're not really able to meet or to do this or to achieve the certain goals they had for a day? So what kind of advice would you give to such people?
Okay, cool. So I'll give two main tips. So for me, the first thing that really helps, but I actually love what I do, so I'm looking forward every day to wake up and actually do it. And so for me, I have people who are counting on me, and they're counting on me to do something that I want to do. So it helps a lot. If you can do something that you're passionate about, it helps a lot with like the discipline part. Number two, even if you're passionate about it, you also need to have a practice of creating like a schedule. So like some people are not to-do list people. Like for me, I'm a to-do list person. Like I need to do this and this and this in this month. So I go down, like I start from in this month, I need to do these three things or four things. And then I separate those four things into the 4 weeks. And then for each four weeks, I break down each item into small goals. So at the end of it, I have like, I've planned out a month sort of, but with the flexibility that I allow myself, like I want to reach a specific goal. I don't even set a timeline. I just want like, this has to be done by the end of this week. How I do it is up to me. So that's why I put the flexibility, because sometimes if you put a to-do list that you have to do this by 5 p.m., by 6 p.m., what happens is that if you don't do it, you become like very disappointed with yourself. Well, I've not done this and that, which is not helpful because it kind of like makes you feel like you can't do stuff. So incorporate structure, but flexibility as well. And then give enough time so that if you feel sick, you can actually decide to take a break of 1 hour. If you feel like you need a break and just need to walk outside, you have a break of 1 hour in between. So make time for things that are just life, mainly because you might plan for stuff, but this week something happens and you don't get to work the whole week. And you need to be able to understand that that's life. You're not a machine per se. Yeah, and God wouldn't let you be a machine that every week is like in accordance to Lillian's plan, this will happen. He'll always interrupt your plan in one way or the other. So be willing to be interrupted. And if you can create time for interruptions, for me, it's always like, if you have a goal you need to reach in the next 2 weeks, start 2 weeks before, so that if there's any interruption in the second week, you're like, hey, at least I had started before. So for me, I also plan in mind that one, I need to be empathize with myself, that sometimes I love days I don't want to work. Sometimes there are things that will happen that I can't control. Sometimes things will happen and I don't feel like working on that day because I'm really, really tired. I start work really, really early so that if those days come in, I'm still okay. So that's sort of like creating structure such that it allows anything that happens in life can happen, but you're still a bit in line, like you've given yourself enough space.
I hear you 100%. It's just, I think it all boils down to being disciplined, but then also being very kind to yourself, because when you're at home, sometimes there are a lot of distractions that come. As long as you have goals you have to meet at the end of the month or at the end of the week, even if you do them, even if you do other things and do them in one day, as long as you've met those goals, for me, I still see it as progress. So that's another way to look at it.
Yeah.
So you are running, you're full-time on your business. Have you, because I know I've seen people most of the times, like I've talked to a few people who decided to not get into business immediately after campus. Because you see, now your schoolmates are working, they're earning money outside here. They're working for different companies, different jobs. You're here with this idea, trying to see you get to work. And the challenge about business is sometimes things work. Sometimes things just don't go as you had planned, but you just have to keep pushing. So Have you ever has it ever crossed your mind sometimes to have you ever like had those doubts in your head or feeling anyway, I'm unemployed. Has some of those thoughts crossed your mind? Feeling you're unemployed, feeling you're not enough, maybe you should stop this thing and now go get a job or just do something else. What are some of has some has something like that ever crossed your mind?
Yeah, definitely. Like it happens like often, but like one of the things I always say is that I'm learning to be more flexible. Like there was like someone once told me that, especially like it applies to finance, that sometimes you need to be able to don't be trapped in a box. So for example, he was explaining to me something around finance, and he was saying that if you don't understand finance, then you're trapped in a box, mainly because you can't make decisions around finance. So finance traps you inside that box. And it's like that with many things in life. The same thing with even the thing that you're passionate about, that at the same time that there's something that they're giving you energy and like you really like it. But if you are not flexible around how you work around it, it becomes sort of like your box as well. So that even at some point, if your business is not working well, doesn't mean that it's going to end. I mean, everyone who, even famous people, have times when their businesses didn't work well and they had to take a break to go. But they have to think about their business sort of like they can't be imprisoned by their business in terms of it has to be like it has to be done this way. Like I can't take a break and think about this and that. If your business becomes your prison, then it's still a prison. You end up suffering a lot. And you
Yeah.
won't love your passion the way you loved it. It's more about understanding that being flexible with the fact that every idea has its own time. It might have its peak and then its low moments. And you need to be able to tell yourself that in those low moments, what can I do to sustain the business so that when it peaks again, I can start coming. So if you feel like you need to come from full time to part time and then go back to full time, make wise decisions such that you're the one who's controlling the narrative of the story, not the business, not your passion, in terms of like you're so trapped by it that you can't see the benefit of thinking outside the box so that you keep it surviving. So that's one thing that I'm constantly doing. And then the other thing is that I have learned that you're always choosing your pain. Like every decision that you make, you're choosing the kind of pain that you're willing to take. So for me, for example, if I have a friend who's really doing well at PwC, she has chosen that because she has chosen a specific kind of pain that she's willing to take. For me, I'm not working in PwC because I would rather have the pain of not working there than not working on my passion right now, because this is the time for it. There'll be a come a time whereby working in my business right now, it might come like it's more painful to be here than to take another opportunity I'm seeing. And so I choose that I'm more comfortable with that pain than with this particular pain. So it's sort of like it's choosing what are you willing to take as a hit. Either way, you're going to take a hit, just choose what you're more comfortable taking and you can live with it. So for me, like during my period, even right now, as I'm working on this business full time, there's a lot of struggles, but the struggles that I've accepted and I've taken, those are struggles I have chosen. Don't be the kind of person complaining because you didn't choose your struggles. Choose your struggles so that you can, when they come, you're like, I have accepted this struggle. I will work with it. I will go through it because I have chosen it. If it's involuntary, you just take like the position of I'm going to do this like job full time, and you don't choose the struggles that come with it, then you start blaming yourself or someone else for whatever is happening, and you can't work like that. You need to be able to say that I chose these struggles, I'm going to take it. I want to work through, and it helps a lot. So just choose your struggles really well. The ones that you know, if you took, I can live with it. Don't choose struggles that if you took, you can't live with them.
Yeah, I get it. Well, choose your struggle, choose your pain. Because I know the people who prefer to get to take a certain path, you may have decided to work on your passion. So I think the whole secret is in everything you choose to decide. The decision you decide to make, you have to make sure you give it your all. Like if you've decided now to work on your business, give it your 100%. Until by the time you are choosing something else, you know you have. You have probably done your best. You've done your very best. So you started in 2018 now, you've launched it, you've had your first cohort of students. How many students, how many cohorts have you had since then? What courses are you offering right now?
Okay, cool. So we've had five cohorts. This is our fifth cohort at Design Learning. So it's been very interesting. We've had peak moments and we've had like not so much of peak moments. But ideally for me, it's the learning that I've gone through so much that I'm even thinking of even starting my own course on how to create online courses. That's something that I might think in the future, because there's so much to learn. And there's so many people with interesting like information that they would like to start seeing how can they start teaching people. So that even like looking at the news that was coming in last week, is that there's going to be a reduced amount that's going to universities. So in terms of like cash from the government, what that means is that even Health was saying it, some people would get the cash that they need or the loan that they need to go to university. That means the people that are outside school, what if you can actually teach those people through an online course? Because there's a lot of internet penetration in Kenya, sort of like devolving information that no longer is it belonging to the universities, but individual people can take the step to actually teach people. That Masha can be the teacher who can teach people design like anywhere else and even cost them at a very low price or even a high price. It doesn't matter, but I can imagine like any online course costs like nothing compared to a university. So university is really expensive. Even if you choose to cost your online course like a third of it and you're still making income, someone is still learning from you and meets the same goal as someone who went through university. Because right now things like people who are taking a design course in the university, I don't know how their path is going, but I'm so sure there's someone who can create an online course that can help them even reach the same path. Most people look for accredited courses, but even for us, when we ask our students, like they ask us about accredited, we normally tell them that right now, even those degrees that people are getting in university, like how much value would you attribute to it? Like what value is it going to when you're going to the workplace? Would you rather have an accredited certificate or course and it's not translating into a job, or would you rather do a course that's not giving you a certificate that's accredited, but it's getting you the job that you want, right? It's making you that you wanted. So yeah, that's something interesting right there.
Yeah, learning has changed for me. Even with COVID now, we've had a lot of people take up online courses. And currently, I'd rather learn. For me, it's all about learning. I don't even care whether you're accredited or not. I just want to learn. There's a huge gap in relevance, because sometimes the things we are taught, it's good stuff, but then it's not skills or things that are going to help you on the marketplace sometimes. A lot of the courses we have are not very practical. And so there's a place for all these online courses. So congratulations on the five cohorts that you've done so far, so good.
You keep pushing.
So yeah, I also know the knowledge business is one of those. You can never go wrong with impacting knowledge. Schools, having a school per se, it's like you're having a school. So I feel like there's always something you can get to learn from someone. So do you think it's important for people to consider now even being teachers in some of these courses? Is this something that Design Learning can really help guys who are willing to do master classes or to do online courses? Is that a product or a service you guys also offer?
Not yet, but it's something we can start thinking about, because I'm also going to start sharing content around how we have been able to. So it's been a 1 year journey. We want to actually share our lessons so that people can start thinking about this. We'd love to be partners with anyone who'd actually start to think about, especially in the area of, so for right now, we're focusing on content creation. Anyone in the space of content creation who's interested in teaching people their process, right? They've been at it and they're like, yeah, I actually want to teach people my process because I think it can really help them. We'll be happy to work with such people as well. Start building off your own course, that anyone who finishes our course can actually come to Masha's class and be able to say that, I want to focus on podcasting. Can you teach us your process? And then you help them become better and better with each cohort. No one starts off perfect. No course starts off being the amazing thing. Same thing with testing. Like you start with something small, make it better with time, to the point that if it's your passion that you see yourself being the long term, not don't you can think of yourself, and not everyone is a teacher, but you can think of yourself thinking like, if it's something that you have this spirit of service that you will go out of your way to help your students grow, that's when you know that you can do an online course, because it takes a lot of effort and time. But if you generally have that spirit of, hey, like if someone calls me, tells me do this and that, I help them out like in 1 minute, that's my thing, then I know I can be an online teacher. So you can create a course, and yeah, it starts working off like that. And it doesn't have to be something that's very technical. There are courses that you can take that there's very little effort that you put, but you're making impact. So yeah, we are definitely looking for people who are interested in growing or sharing their knowledge through courses and partnering with them to just help them craft their course and then partner with us as well.
You've always evaluated, like with every cohort, you are always evaluating and ensuring that things are changing with time. That means there's always a mindset of a learner. Keep improving, keep improving, keep improving. See what works, see what didn't work. What can you do to make it better? And so I want to commend you for that. That's an amazing job. So yeah, now since our podcast is just to help people get to their full creative potential, and there's a question I always keep asking people, what are some of the things you do that help you stay creative?
Yeah, cool. So one practice I can share last week was that whenever I'm stuck, instead of being in that space of being stuck, I actually go and do something that's fun. And that helps unblock like any like problems that I'm having. And then also doing like being in a space where people are doing different things from I am, that's actually helped me. So for example, like last week I was stuck about something, I decided to go play some games as I think about the problem, and it makes the problem a lot lighter. It makes it more fun to even think of possibilities. So that's one thing. When you're stuck, put yourself in an environment that will reduce tension. And number two, be around people who are doing new things, amazing things that will challenge you. So for me right now, I'm doing a course on called the On Deck for Course Creators. It's a really awesome course. And what I'm learning is the different formats you can put an online course into. There's so many formats that people are doing that I'm like, wow, I've only scratched the surface. Like there's so much more that I can do, so many more opportunities, so many things I can learn, that it humbles me to the point of I am constantly looking for ways to implement. So ideally making space in each week for me to try something new, something that can really help me stay like in the field that I am, because I feel like there's something I can do that.
Yeah, oh, that's nice. You've mentioned about the course that you're doing right now, because it really helps you. It's also good for me. I think it's very wrong for someone to create in isolation. I know we are, it's during a lockdown, not necessarily a lockdown right now, because at least things have opened up, but staying at home by yourself, creating by yourself, letting no one know about what you're doing is one of the inhuman things you can do to yourself as a creative. It's always good to just get yourself out there and get to see what other creatives are doing. Do you have any particular books? Do you have any particular books that you enjoy reading that maybe you might want people to try out that have really shaped the way you do and think?
So for now, I listen more to podcasts. Mm-hmm. The one podcast that I listen to a lot is called the Craig Crochelle podcast. So he's a leadership. I love his podcast because he's so real. He's welcoming. He has different people who do amazing things coming, and they're giving you real tips. So that I love. Of course, I listen to Mashatisa as well. So I'll keep you know, the creative podcast, creative bulb.
Yeah.
So those are the resources I'd give guys. I think for me, I love the podcast because I get to interact with him on a weekly basis. I learn something new very quickly, and I'm able to implement it.
You've mentioned things about your work ethic. You've mentioned things about redesign learning, the things you've been able to learn from it, your ups and your downs. What's that one piece of advice, or those pieces of advice, whatever, that you'd want to tell someone who's listening to this podcast, someone who's aspiring to like start a business like yours, who has not tested the ideas? For me, I think for you, it's just testing ideas. What advice would you have for someone with this idea and they're looking to be as successful as you are?
I can't say So I won't say no to myself. So I have had many successes, and there are some failures as well. So that's what I would love to highlight right there. But I think the one thing that I try to do all the time is that I never want to be the person who says no to myself. Like any idea I have, anything I want to implement in the next 1 week, whatever feeling I have, it will never be me who will say no to that idea. I will just do it anyway. So like, however big, however small, I'll just do it. And then I'll let everyone else give me the feedback. But for me, I always say that I'll be my yes person. And I think that's the biggest challenge that most people have. Like you have an idea and you're the first person to like detract it or make like say no to yourself. I would advise people never to be that person. Never be the person who says no. Like let everyone else be that person. But you always say yes to every idea that comes your way, as long as it's good, of course. If it's bad, then yeah, you know, it's definitely a no. But a good idea for me is an idea that looks to help people or serve people in a way that it can help them meet their goal in a positive way. So for me, any idea that I feel that can help people meet their goal and make positive impact, that's a good idea. And that means anything that comes to my mind that's helping people, I just say, let me try it. Let me try it. Let me try it. Let me try it. I never say that, no, it won't work. I always say, let me try it. They are the ones who will tell me if it won't work. And then if they say no, I try it in a different way. Then they tell me, no, again, I try it a different way. And then they say yes. I'm like, yes, finally, you agree with me.
Yeah.
Never be the one to say
no. Never be the one to say no to yourself. Whenever an idea just comes, say yes to the idea. Write it down. Of course, you may not have to. It can be a distraction. When you have so many things coming in, so you're trying everything out. Of course, you clearly need to have strategy. You have the idea, yes, but plan. At least achieve the goals you had for the week, but then at the same time, also say yes to the different ideas. That's something I'm getting to learn from you. So even as we wind up, you have mentioned something about some failures you've been able to have. So would you mention like some of, what are some of the low moments that you've had and how did you navigate and what did you learn from some of those experiences, even as a business or whatever?
Okay, so I can share that one really quick. One of the failures would be that there are some times when we've advertised the course and we haven't had the intake that we wanted, less than the numbers that we actually want, and especially during COVID period. So for us, it's very hard because you put in a lot of work and you know the value that you can give and you have really good testimonials. But the thing is that you can't control the market and tell the market that they have to buy it. They have to make the decision for it. So for me, those are many moments where you always doubt yourself and you're like, do you want to do this in the long run or should you try and reshape the course so that it can help you be sustainable as well as reach your goal, of which I'm seeing so many opportunities to do that right now it's less of whatever an issue per se, but at the moment it's normally like really overbearing. And for me, what helps is that I always write down things that are really good that happened, and at that moment when things are not well, I go back and read those things. So you just remember that, because when you're in a slump, you only tend to see everything that's negative. You don't see how you can actually resolve challenges. So for me, I always go back to what I've written before that really worked. I go back to student testimonials. I go back to talk to my students and ask them, like, what are you doing now? And it reminds me of the impact I'm making. And then I feel like, yeah, because of that impact, I can do this and that and that.
For you, since you have a team, do you think the team has really helped in terms of helping you not to give up? Because most of the times for creatives in business, you find that you're by yourself. There's no one else, it's just you, the director, the whatever, the editor, the everything. So do you think having people around you, like part of your team, do you think they really helped you in this moment when you felt like, hey, yeah, I'm not even doing this redesign learning, I want to go look for a job?
Yeah, they do actually. They do a lot, because one of the things we help people is connecting them to jobs. And so, for example, Melanie, who's starting her own agency, she's working with a few of the students. So she tells me some of the things the students are doing, and I always tell her, like, keep on sharing with me what you see the students are doing, like, in your own agency. And for me, those messages help me see, like, okay, they're still growing. So if I bring on more people, bring more partners who are willing to take the students on, and we have really exceptional students. So for me, it's more of looking for partners who, if we connect them with students, we ask them to share those stories with us. So Melanie has been really helpful in terms of, like, helping me see what all the students are doing, then it reminds me why we started what we started. As well with Gideon, he opens my mind up in terms of like seeing opportunities as well. Helps out in just, you know, creating calm moments. We share like very funny moments, light moments. So it also helps you see that life is not just one freaking moment. It's several things that you put together to make it what it is. So they definitely play like a very key role in making my life a lot lighter, a lot easier, a lot more enjoyable.
So in conclusion, what's the thing you'd want people to know?
I think it's just that one thing for never be the person to say no to yourself. So I think I have like a quote I got to post on Twitter once. I posted this. So there are two quotes. The first one was around perfection. And this guy was saying that the reason people procrastinate specifically, and even for me, I saw it for myself, was the fact that you're creating more time for yourself to make something perfect. But for him, he was explaining the fact that there's nothing that human beings create that will ever be perfect. So you're actually procrastinating the inevitable, that even if you give out whatever you're creating now, it will be not perfect. If you do it 2 days from now, it will still be not perfect. So if you might as well just do it today, because it's not going to be perfect any time in the future. So for me, understanding that, I was like, whoa. So you mean I've been procrastinating because I think that if I do it tomorrow, I think it's a better day to do it. It's not going to be a better day. It will not come out any better at all. It will just be imperfect, right? There's levels of imperfection, but in the end, it's still be imperfect. So if you get the opportunity, just do it now. It will be imperfect. Tomorrow, it will be imperfect. So don't procrastinate because you feel that that creating for yourself more time will actually help you reach there. And then there was this thing that the coach was saying is, if I'm not for myself, then who will be for me? If I am not for others, what am I? And if not now, when? So for me, the first part is really good. Yeah, it's by Rabbi Hillel. But the thing that really asked me is that if you're not for yourself, who will be for you? You're getting. So if I'm not the one who says yes to my idea every time it comes, who will be that person? Mm-hmm. Absolutely no one. No one else is in your head apart from you when you hear those ideas. So if you kill them the first moment they come in, everyone else will shoot them down. But if you present your idea, it may be a simple idea, but you present it like it's the next big idea, you'll find out some people actually think it's awesome and you're like, hey, I wish these people knew how this simple this idea was in my head. I just make it look, you know, what it was, how I felt it was. So if you're not for yourself, know that there will be no one else who will be there for you. So never be the one to say no to yourself.
How can people find you and your business?
So you can find me on Twitter, Lilian Chico, or Redilan. Re_DLearn, or you can just search redesign learning, you'll find us. So, and then for me specifically, Lilian Chico. Lilian and then CIKU. You'll find me on Twitter and you'll find everything of us there. You can find a link to our course on our page for Twitter. And yeah, you can also find me there. Text me if you have any questions or tweet something and I'll always retweet it. So I'm always looking to partner with people who love to help others grow. And if you want to start that journey, then I'd be glad to connect with you there.
Thank you so much, Lilian, for taking your time to do this podcast. I wish you the very best with learning.